glorified in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, grab your Bibles. We are in Deuteronomy. We are in chapter 2. I decided to split this chapter up a little bit because it didn't really make a whole lot of sense. Deuteronomy 1 through 23 is really kind of its own thing. And then the last half of chapter 2 really goes with the first half of chapter 3. And so it talks about travelings, and then it talks about victories. And so I thought it was important maybe we would just split it, and that way we would take a different look at it. So today is 2, 1 through 23, and then next week it'll be the rest of 2 and all of 3, I believe. That doesn't seem right. I don't know. And then there were going to be 4. And then if you take a look forward, chapter 5, we're going to be going in the Ten Commandments. I'm going to do what I did when we did the book of Exodus from way long time ago. And we'll actually take the commandments one by one so that we can understand them a little bit. So Deuteronomy chapter 2, we're starting in verse 1. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Lord, may the words of my mouth and may the meditation of each of our hearts be holy and acceptable in your sight, our guide and our redeemer. Amen. Well, when I was in junior high, I went to Jepson Junior High School in Vacaville, California. And it was a very interestingly laid out campus, and especially when we started, when we would have lunch. We almost always ate outside. There was lots of tables outside, but there was this one field, and the field backed up right up to the parking lot. And there was like a place to sit, and it was a great place. So me and my buddies, we always went and sat on that little bench right on the border between the field and the parking lot. And it was very interesting because there was a lunch monitor, right? Do you remember lunch? Were any of you lunch monitors? Oh, you were a lunch monitor? The power, I mean, it courses through your veins. Like, oh man, we had this lunch monitor. So we'd be sitting eating our lunch, and a couple of times it wasn't comfortable sitting like all facing one direction, be able to talk. So sometimes as guys, we just kind of straddle it, right? That way we could talk to each other. But what that meant was our foot then landed in the parking lot area, and in came the lunch monitor. You can't. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean? She's like, you're in the parking lot. I'm like, we're just sitting here trying to eat lunch, and the lunch is disgusting, and we don't like it. And it was constant birds, the amount of seagulls we had in the city of Vacaville. And, you know, we're always ducking and bobbing and weaving. And I'm like, really, this is wrong. And then I swung my leg over, because you know me, I'm very compliant and I never am snarky ever. And I swung my foot back into safety zone. I'm like, this is okay. But this is not. She says, exactly. And I'm like, really? I said, can you please show me in the lunch monitor manual that tells me this? She's like, well, there is no lunch monitor manual. And I said, so then how come it's wrong? She's like, because I said so. And I'm like, oh, because you said, again, I'm a very compliant, I'm a very nice, kind, I was a rotten teenager. And so we always had these problems, and she kept like, and what we would do is, I feel so bad. We would swing our legs over, and then person would keep an eye out. And sure enough, here she comes. We would swing our legs back in, but we would wait until she was like coming right on up to us. And then we'd swing our legs over, and she'd be like, huh. She would march away, right? And then we'd put our thing, she's like, oh, and then we'd, so we did this a lot because this was the rule. Now I don't know where the rule came from, didn't know what it was, but it's a very, I know for myself, and I think you do too, that we are all creatures of wanting to test the boundaries, right? We are like the velociraptors in Jurassic Park, right? They test the fence, but they never test the same part of the fence twice because they're looking for the weakness. This is almost exactly what teenagers do. What they like to do is they like to test the boundaries, test the limit. Well, how far can I actually go? Just like us with our swinging our leg back and over. how far can I go? Because that's how, I don't know why, we are people that just simply rebel against rules and following those rules. And I think that most of us do this. For instance, still is one of the number one questions I get from college students and young adults, sexually, how far is too far, right? Like, where's the line? Like, how, you know, can I go this far? How about this far? And of course, I usually turn around and say, you're asking all the wrong questions. You shouldn't be asking, how far can I go? How can I honor God with my relationships? Or I know that no bad words are supposed to come out of our mouth. So what words are those bad words? Like, can we have a list? And can I say bloody? Because we know in England, that would be very offensive, but here in America, not so offensive. And can we say this word or this word or this word? In fact, I actually had my vicarage supervisor. He said that he required me, I could not say the words shoot, darn, or something else. I forgot what. But he says, look, we know what you're saying. So don't, you know, that's not, you shouldn't be going in that direction. And I'm like, oh, that's right. And oh my gosh, like you cannot say oh my gosh. Because he's like, we all know what you're saying. And so, we what are these words we can say, and then I will promise not to say those words. Or some people ask about giving to the church. They're like, okay, so what exactly am I supposed to be giving to the church? And okay, well, okay, I hear this you know 10%, and so big question, is that off my gross or off my net? Right? If I get an inheritance from grandma for $400,000, but grandma was a really strong tither and giver to the church, essentially that money has already been tithed upon. So do I need to then with the give for it, right? We are people, we always try to figure out how can I get away with stuff? This is what we're going to be encountering as the Israelites are moving along in the wilderness. Now, Catherine, are you still up there? Yeah, I my laser pointer did not work. It won't show on this. This is terrible. So I wish I could have something to point to. So what you're looking at here is the Sinai Peninsula. So you've got the Red Sea. It's got these like two little fingers. Red Sea, has that been in the news lately? Yeah, it's all over the news. So you might see maps of this caliber. So in the far left, you see these three arrows going down. That is where the Israelites started off in Egypt when they went and said, Pharaoh, oh baby, let my people go, huh? And so then they traveled all the way down to the bottom part of that triangle. And that's where Mount Sinai is at. And that's where they got their commandments. That's where they were told this is how to live life. And then they started going up on the right-hand side. Now, do you see the green in the upper right? That's the promised land. That's essentially what they're going. So they end up going up, and right as they're going up, they then take a slight left, and that's where Kadesh Barnea is at. That's where we're actually located in this story, Kadesh Barnea. This is where they then sent in the 12 spies. 10 were bad, 2 were good, they came back. And because of that, God then sent them around, kind of just in a circle, right in that area. They just circled. And that's why, and go ahead and leave the map up because I'm gonna see if I can do this. So chapter 2, verse 1, then we turned back and set toward the desert along the route to the Red Sea, because this was the rebellion that had just taken place. As the Lord directed me, for a long time we made our way around the hill country of Seir. So that's that area that they're just circling now. Then the Lord said to me, you have made your way around this hill country long enough. This is like when the coach says, you got to do laps. Eventually they go, okay, you've done enough laps. Let's like get going. Now remember about how long were those laps? About 40 years worth of laps. So they've been going for a while. And now they're getting ready to eventually head back on up. So then the Lord said to me, you made your way through the hill country long enough. Now turn north. So they're going to head north. Now, if you look, again, a little hard to see, but if they head directly north, boom, they're in the promised land. But what they decide to do, and it's not recorded here, you'd have to look at Numbers 20, but I'm kind of going to put the pieces together for you. They decide that they're going to head first east, and then they're going to head up north along the backside. The problem is, there's people there, and this was not the route that God had said for them to go. So in Numbers 20, it shows them as they get up into that area, it's called the King's Highway. They talk to their brothers, and they're like, hey, we're traveling through. Can we have safe passage? Now, the reason why you kind of got to ask is this is about 2 million people. This is a massive group that's coming through. And now if you were a king or a leader in the area, would you want 2 million people? Just even if you say, look, we're just traveling through. We're gonna hit this and then we're going to keep on going. But we're going to pay you whatever you want if we eat some of your food along the way, right? Like you're walking by and you got your, you know, neighbor's tomato things. So they're just going to reach out and grab some of their tomatoes. And this person's got the lime tree and they're just going to reach over and grab all the limes that are falling in your yard. That's our neighbors right there that we drop fruit for each other. And we will make sure and do this. But then in Numbers 20, it's a very interesting thing because I think this is how it goes, though I can't prove it. If that all happens and they get through to the King's Highway because this would be the easiest route to go. And the leaders of the Edomites came out and they said, no. And they said, please? And they said, no. And they said, well, let's try it anyway. And then Edom sent this massive army down and blocked them. And the Israelites said, oh, okay, we're going to take a different route now. So what they end up doing is they have to head up back northwest, and then they're going to cut over to avoid the majority of the Edomites, and then as they go. So let's take a look at this as they keep going. So you've been going through the hill country enough. You are about to pass through the territory of your brothers, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. Now, this again has already happened. And now this is it's essentially a second time because as they do it, they're going to be skirting a different part of Edom. Now, do y'all remember the story? Jacob and Esau, right? We got Esau is the oldest. Dad is kind of losing his eyesight. Esau and Jacob are two brothers that just always battle each other. They're always fighting. You got Esau. He's kind of like the manly dude. Like he's got a lot of hair. His fingers are all calloused and gross because he works outside and he hunts and he fishes, right? And he whittles wood and builds traps. And he's this really manly dude. And he's very hairy, right? And the color of his hair is red because that's Edom actually means red. Esau means red. And so, and then you got Jacob. And Jacob's a mama's boy. Jacob's got very fair skin. Jacob's got very soft hands. He is not a manly dude. He doesn't really, you know, and he is also now second in line. And also remember, Jacob and Esau are technically twins, right? Esau came out about 30 seconds ahead of poor Jacob. And of course, Jacob, what was he doing as Esau was coming through the birth canal? What was Jacob doing? Yeah, he was the heel grabber, right? Because that's what Jacob means, heel grabber. And so he's grabbing onto the heel, almost like, hey, can I pull this dude back down and I can then shoot up first? So Jacob comes out second. And so the problem is with the inheritance is the inheritance always goes to the older. The oldest gets the double portion and then whatever is left is for everyone else. And so Esau is out and he's hunting and he's making a name for himself and he's very wildly successful. And you know, he's a man, he's his own man. And he comes in and there's Jacob and he's not doing anything except he's cooking, right? He's cooking some stew, right? And as he's cooking the stew, Esau's like, man, stew smells delicious. And Esau's like, I'm really hungry, give me some of the stew. And Jacob, who is also a manipulator, says, I'll only give it to you if you give me your inheritance. Stew, inheritance. Esau, I guess, is either A, he's really not connected with the family that well, and maybe he doesn't even like his dad, or maybe he's already, again, so self-serving, he can do his own stuff. He says, you know what, I'm just so hungry. Guys, we do stupid things when we're hungry, right? I think everyone does stupid things when you're hungry, right? We don't act. He sells his birthright for a pot of stew. So then later on, as dad is getting old and decrepit and his eyesight's failing, dad doesn't know about the arrangement. And it's interesting because Jacob doesn't remind Esau and say, hey, do you remember that deal we had back then? No, instead, and this also tells you he's a mama's boy, mama comes to him and says, honey, dad's about to die. He is now about to confer the blessing on the two kids. So you need to make sure that you are the one that receives the first blessing. So you need to be Esau.
I don't know if I can do that, Dad. Mom?
Okay, first of all, you got to change your voice, man. You got to sound like Esau, right? Esau, he's tough. I don't know. It could have also been totally switched. And son, your arms, they're not hairy enough. Your chest is, you have nothing. You are clean. This is terrible. So we're going to put some animal skins on you, right? And then when he reaches out and touches you, he'll be like, oh, wow. Okay. And then yeah, please make sure you change your voice. And is there any way, like maybe you can smell bad? Like Esau, he's out there, he's working and you're just kind of hanging out here and you don't smell that, but can you do this? And so he does all that. And then he goes into dad and he's like, hi, Dad. Hey, Jacob, oh, no, hi, Dad, how are you?
That doesn't quite sound here. Reach here, let me,
yeah, Dad, here, feel my arm. Feel how manly that is. Yes, oh, yes, it's very hairy. And Dad thinks that something's off, but he doesn't really decide to do anything. And so he confers his blessing upon Jacob, and he receives everything. And Esau receives just a normal inheritance, but essentially nothing, because he gets the double portion. Jacob gets the double portion. Now, if you had a brother like that, how happy are you with them? I'm pretty angry. I'd be very ticked. And sure enough, Jacob and Esau just kind of have fights throughout the years. And in fact, there's this incredible fight that takes place, and there's this reconciliation that takes place, and it's great. And this is also then what leads again. Malachi talks about how Jacob I loved, Esau I hated, which again is not quite a really good translation, because what we're going to see here is Esau and the Edomites are all given land, and they are all promised. God says, I will take care of you. So it's not as if God has rejected them. They are just not in the covenantal place in terms of their lineage of being the chosen people following after God. They can still follow after God, but they're not in that particular line. So they're trying to break into Edom, and they essentially get turned away, and they have to go the long way around. Now, I don't know about you. I hate the long way around. Last night, I ran to the grocery store, and I had to pick up some Fritos because we were making Texas hash, and we had to buy some milk because Joshua's home and he drinks a lot of milk. And so I went in, I bought the stuff, I come out, and I can't get out of Vons. I think what did you know what happened?
It was a dead body.
I thought it was someone died too. Yeah, so they had cornered off like most of the Vons parking lot. And I thought, that's okay, you know what? I'll just sneak up to the Starbucks and then I'll go out that way. And everyone else was trying to do that too. There was only one way out of Vons, and it was, you had to go all the way to the right and then past that weird steakhouse that I don't really like, but I can't remember. What was it? Tartan Room. Yes, the Tartan Room. Yeah. Is it? I've tried it a couple times. I just don't like it. It's disgusting. Anyway, and sure enough, we are all there, and I'm sitting there going, this is stupid. Like, my house is that way, but I have to go that way to go out and around. It makes me angry. And that's what the Israelites are doing. They now have to go back up towards Kadesh Barnea, where they were originally at, and then go further north. And then as they're going north, I would be looking at it going, God, there, right there, north. Just head, if you see it, if you head straight north, you would hit a town called Beersheba, which is the southernmost city in the promised land. Dan to Beersheba, that's how you would know the thing. They had the chance to go, and God's like, nope, you're going to take a right now, because you got to go through and hit where the Edomites are at. Man, I'd be so upset.
You had to cross the Jordan.
had to, this is where he's leading him, because what he's going to do is he's taking him up all the way on the right-hand side, and then you've got to cross over. This is the long way around. Now, again, I might be upset. I might be angry because I don't like extra travel. I don't like extra work. I don't like extra stuff. And I think it's the same way in my spiritual life as well. Sometimes God asks me to do something. I don't do it. I end up having to take a detour, and then I get very grumpy as the detour is happening. But I forget, why am I on the detour? It was my own choices that got me on this detour. But here's the joy of it. You could be on a detour, and if God is still leading you and you are still following the leader, you are still good. You don't have to worry about it. You can just simply follow. So they're on this thing, and let's see what God says. As he says, you're about to go through the descendants of Esau who live in Seir, and the end of verse 4, they will be afraid of you, but be very careful, do not provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land, not even enough to put your foot on. I have given Esau the hill country of Seir as his own. You are to pay them in silver for the food you eat and the water you drink. So the same words are given. You've got to follow what I'm telling you. And you're going to be tempted, because as you're going through the hill country, you'll be like, you know, these Edomites, we're technically related to them, and we are pretty big. We've got a big contingency of people. Maybe we just take over this place. And God says, don't you dare. This is a huge reminder. Because I think for us, we often think that God is only in control of those things where his people are. But we forget the whole reason, one of the reasons why the 10 plagues hit was because God was demonstrating every single one of those gods, it's me. I'm the one. There is no other gods, and I'm the most powerful of the gods. I'm the only God. And all these other people, and what he's going to be doing is he's going to be taking them on this tour. And he's going to be showing them some very important things, lessons for you and I to learn about what it means to follow after God. So much so that if you read the opening chapters of Joshua, one of the things that Joshua says over and over and over again, besides do not be afraid, be encouraged, let me strengthen you, but he says, do not go to the right or to the left. Stay where I'm at. Do not swing your leg into the parking lot. You are staying on this path. And again, it's tough because I would be looking at this saying, but God, like, there, let's go. Like, this would be great. And God says, no, follow me. Trust me. And as they're going through, these Edomites, they are scared, but they're not so scared that they won't come after you. Instead, they had already assembled once before, but this time, because they're skirting in a totally different direction, the Edomites essentially leave them alone. Verse 7, the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hands. He has watched over your journey through this vast desert. These 40 years, the Lord your God has been with you, and you have not lacked anything. Again, if you get scared of the monsters in front of you, look behind you and see what God has done. And see how God protects and takes care of his people. Verse 8, so we went on past our brothers, the descendants of Esau who live in Seir. We turned from the Arabah road, which comes up from Eloth and Ezion-Geber, and traveled along the desert road of Moab. So they're going, again, a totally different route, which is crazy. Then there's another group they run into, the dreaded Moabites. Then the Lord said to me, do not harass the Moabites or provoke them to war, for I will not give you any part of their land. I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot as a possession. So these are people that came from Lot's two kids, two girls, not really good girls at all. If you know the story, it's bad. And but God said, my blessing still is with my people, even tangentially. So you're going to come into the Moabite area and don't touch any of their stuff either. Staying on the road. Don't be veering off going, oh, this is really good land over here. Oh, wow, this would be a great place to hunker down and live for a while. No, 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 no. Do not harass them. Do not provoke them. I am with them. Isn't that interesting? Some of the dreaded enemies of God, God says, I'm the one who controls these affairs. This is how we're going to do things. So then there's this really interesting thing that it took me a while to figure out what God was doing, but I think I figured it out of why this stuff is in the Bible. Verse 10, and you see there is an actual parentheses there, and I think this is actually a parenthetical thing because it says the Emites used to live there. Okay, a rough translation of Emite would be terror. Could also be like zombie. Welcome to zombie land. This is fantastic. The Emites used to live there, a people strong and numerous and as tall as the Anakites. And remember, we talked a little bit about the Anakites. Roughly translated, Anakite means giant man. Oh, yeah. And we're going to hit two of the kings, Sihon and Og. And let me tell you, Og sleeps in a bed that's pretty big. It's pretty funny to see how their character is. So you're going to go through this, and they're strong and numerous and as tall as the Anakites. So the Emites, the terrifying ones, the zombie ones, are going to be there. And like the Anakites, they too were considered Rephaites. What does Rephaite mean? A Rephaite means ghost, ghostly, undead. Like, how would you like it? I'm going to take you through this land, and you're going to have like ghosts on one end and zombies on the other and terrifying people over here and giants over. You think, holy cow, I just stepped into Not Scary Farm. You walk around, you're like, everything around here is bad. And what is God saying? Follow me. Yeah, we're taking a route that maybe you don't want to take. Maybe it's the long way around, but follow me. Trust me. I will guide you through all these difficult situations. So, verse 12, Horites used to live there. But the descendants of Esau drove them out. They destroyed the Horites from before them and settled in their place just as Israel did. And the Lord gave them as their possession. And again, I'm like, God, I really don't care. Like, this is really terrible material. And then it hits me. Why is God including this material? And I think I know the reason why. When they were first at Kadesh Barnea and they sent the 12 men to spy on Canaan, what was the report that came back? Oh, guys, there are giants, there are ghosts, there are zombies. You haven't hit one. It's going to be, the rough translation would be terrifying sound. So shriekers, maybe something like that, or moaners and wailers, but in an awful, scary type situation. And they're like, man, we saw all this. And what did the Israelites do? They crumbled and they fell. But what did the Edomites do? The Edomites actually went into that land without the promise of God, without this direct guiding. They knew this was going to be their land, so they came into the land and they took care of it. And this is when ungodly people live more godly than those who follow after God people. And I think that God is, as he's walking them through this land, is saying, see, look, here's a group of people and they're doing okay. They're not terrified or worried, and I'm with you. So if I'm with you, why are you, they're not terrified, why are you so scared? You're facing the same thing, and yet you are freaking out. And just follow after me. Trust in me, I will guide you through this land. Yeah, they're going right through some areas that are, well, no, this is the problem. So, and this would be definitely another lesson, but I'll hit it, but I'll move on quickly. They're in an area that's okay, right? But, you know, there's a better land up ahead. You know, it would be like if I'm crossing the United States of America, and as I'm crossing, I get to Vegas, and I'm like, Not too bad, a little hot, but looks okay. And what are you thinking? No. You just gotta keep going and get, and then they get to the mountain range. And this ain't too bad. We're on the east side of the mountain. This is beautiful, this is wonderful. No. Just keep going. You're gonna hit the beach soon. And it's gonna be beautiful and it will be wonderful. That's what God is training. So here's all this other land that I have not given you because I've got something better for you, but these people are following and trusting, and you can too. If you have a hard time trusting, I'm always amazed when I see sometimes very ungodly people living a, for lack of a better word, living a Christian covenantal life better than the people who are in the covenant. I don't think God is sitting there going, you know, here's a bunch of guilt I'm gonna pour on you, but he's trying to tell you, look, you don't have anything to be afraid of. Why are you worried about your future? I've already got it. Why are you worried about your children? I've got that. Why are you worried about your 401k? I'm your God. I'm gonna be there and I'm gonna love you and I'm gonna protect you no matter what happens. All right, so verse 13, and the Lord said, now get up and cross the Zered Valley. So we crossed the valley. 38 years passed from the time, and again, it's a nice, good little recollection. 38 years passed from the time we left Kadesh Barnea until we crossed the Zered Valley. By then, the entire generation of fighting men had perished from the camp, so the Lord had sworn to them. The Lord's hand was against them until he had completely eliminated them from the camp. As they're going now into the promised land, all of the people who were scared before are all dead. What's left is their children. And what they're trying to say is, hey, your parents were a little scared. You don't need to be scared. I mean, that's what I try to tell people nowadays. I did my best. I'm hoping that I made some impact in this world. I look back and I go, wow, I could have done more, but sometimes my life was filled with fear or concern and stuff that caused me to hesitate. And all I can tell the rest of you, if you are younger than me, I hope you do it better than me. Go out and don't listen to my fears. Don't listen and say, wow, Mark says to be scared about this or worried about that. No, you know what? Go boldly and trust in God. And if you are following after God and not veering to the right or the left, God's got you. And you don't have anything to be concerned about. All of them are wiped out. And it's really interesting because you can go back and say, how were they wiped out? Do you remember any of the ways that God kind of culled the herd at that time? There was one that just happened. Yes, Joshua. Exactly. Scariest stories of the Bible from this past year. Vicar preached on it. That's where the ground opened up and it literally swallowed a whole bunch of people and they were all buried alive. Oh, that's terrifying. That's horrifying. But that wasn't even the worst, because after that, then a plague hit, way worse than COVID. 14,000 people died relatively quickly. There's another way that some people died. Also, I think another terrifying way for dying. And that was they were grumbling and whining and crying, complaining. God's like, I can't handle this. You know what? Snakes. Let's get them. And so God sent all these snakes and they all through the camp and the people are like, ow, and freaking out. Who's here scared of snakes? Anyone scared? Okay, yeah, and they're terrifying, right? Like, I don't care if it's, you know, yellow against black is a friend to Jack. These, I don't want anything near it. Like, this is terrifying. And they start doing this and all of a sudden, they're like, God, we messed up. All these people are dying. And God said, okay, Moses, grab a snake, not like a real snake, fashion a snake, put it up on a pole, and then everyone that looks to it will live, which actually turns into a precursor. Jesus uses this exact same language when he says, just as Moses lifted up the snake in the wilderness, so the Son of Man will be lifted up and everyone who looks to him will be saved. So snakes, plagues, all this stuff is happening. The herd is being culled. Everyone is kind of stepping aside, and this new group of people seem to fare better. Now, they don't do it perfectly, right? If you ever read through the book of Joshua, they make some missteps, but let me tell you, they sure seem a lot better than the group before them. All right, so we keep going. Verse 16. Now, when the last of these fighting men among the people had died, the Lord said to me, today you are passed through the region of Moab at Ar. When you come to the Ammonites, do not harass them or provoke them to war, for I will not give you possession of any land belonging to the Ammonites. I've given it to possession of the descendants of Lot. Verse 20, that too was considered a land of the Rephites who used to live there. But the Ammonites, they called them something different. They called them the Zamzumites. Do you feel like we just slipped into a Dr. Seuss book? The Zamzumites and the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Hittites and the Termites and the Adicites and Zamzumites. Please, can someone name your children Zamzuma? Something like that, and then the descendants will be the Zamzumites. Oh, man, I love it. They'll always be last during graduation ceremonies and stuff like that. Verse 21, they were a people strong and numerous and as tall as the Anakites. So when you, Zamzumites, that means shriekers. Terrifying sound. Do you see? God is telling them, look, I know that this land is going to be difficult. I know that there is going to be times that your hearts are going to melt and you're not going to be quite too sure how to live. And all I want you to do is you're going to just follow me. You're going to follow the leader. And if you remember that wonderful little game as a kid, the idea was you would follow him, but you would also do things. Like if the person, the leader spun around, what would it everyone else have to do? They'd have to spin around. If he hopped on one foot, then everyone else would have to do it. And if you didn't, was there any penalty to follow the leader? I don't remember any penalty. Like you can't follow anymore or something like that. But maybe there's just like pressure, like you've got to do it. And wherever that leader went, whatever that leader did, follow. Don't get distracted over here. Yeah, that land is great over there. Sure, you really want to go directly this way because this is the fastest way to everything that I want and need, but God is guiding me this way. Trust. Follow. Don't veer left or right. And as you do, don't be afraid because you'll be like, hey, maybe I'm veering off to the left. Oh my goodness, there's Anakites there. All right, we're going to come over here. Oh, look, they're shrieking Zamzumites. Okay, this is terrifying. And God is walking them through some of the scariest land in the world. And he keeps reminding them, there's people that have come and displaced that. And I'm telling you, I'm with you. Do not be afraid. Follow me. Am I in the middle of verse 21? No, 21. They were a people strong and numerous and as tall as the Anakites. The Lord destroyed them from before the Ammonites who drove them out and settled in their place. The Lord has done the same for the descendants of Esau who lived in Seir when he destroyed the Horites from before them. They drove them out and have lived in their place to this day. And as for the Avites who lived in villages as far as Gaza, oh, Gaza, we know that word, right? This will be the far, far thing right up against the Great Sea, as it was called, and this is the Philistine territory. And as far as the Avites who lived in villages, as far as Gava, the Kaphorites coming from Kaphtor destroyed them and settled in their place. Right now, this is just a walking. Right now, this is just a guiding. And as God guides you through some certain things, there's going to be temptations to either do one of two things. Fight and battle. Or freak out. And as you're doing this, God is saying, hold on, no, you're not gonna harass. You're not gonna fight. You're gonna flex your muscles. You're not gonna say you're awesome. You're following me. Don't go around in this world trying to put everyone else down, telling them how God loves you and no one else. Don't be provoking them. Don't be going out in the world and harassing them. And being morally superior, but at the same time, don't be afraid. Don't worry. I'm going to walk with you. You're going to follow after me. What happens next week is what happens when you live your life as a follower of God in the covenantal life that he has given to you, and you get attacked. That's what happens in these next two stories that we're going to hit next week as they're heading into the promised land up a terrible route a horrible decision, but God says, it's out of the way, but you're going to trust me. I will help you. I will go in front of you. I will strengthen you. Just simply follow me. And that's for all of us. You might be looking at your future and you're freaking out. You might be looking at your 401k and freaking out. You might be looking at the housing prices in California and you're a Zamzam Knight and you just start shrieking. You might look at this world and go, there is a lot of evil in this world. You might be looking around and saying, I don't know if I can even accomplish anything in this world as someone who is a covenantal follower of God. And God says, don't freak out. Don't provoke. We're going the long way around. Just follow the leader.